Hello and welcome back to Chronicles, where today we're going to be talking all about the second novel of the Flashman Papers, Royal Flash. And once again, who better to discuss it with than the office's very own scoundrel and man of the world, Dan. Thank you, Dan.
You are. Yes, hurrah. Yes.
Nice saber.
Thank you. I thought it was appropriate for the subject matter.
Yes. So, look, it's been obviously a good number of episodes now since we sat down and discussed the OG.
Have the audience Flashman. Been good enough to get another Flashman book?
We are definitely back by popular demand.
Right.
In fact, there's a whole sort of like little series that I've started, I've sowed the seeds of. I think episode 10 of Chronicles, Bo and I covered the first of the Master and Commander novels.
Oh, they were right. Yeah, I'll give you that.
Haven't right. got round to getting yes. to the next one. And then there's Sharp and Hornblower all sit.
Yes, know. They're quite good as well.
But the thing was with this, yes. and I do love those, and I really do want to return to them at some point. Yeah. So I we've done Macbeth, we've done more ancient Greek stuff. I've had a great time here, but for months now I've been just thinking, God, I want to read the next Flashman novel, you know?
So of course you do, sir.
So here we are talking all about Royal Flash. Now, this one came out the year after in 1970. And intriguingly as well, is the only Flashman novel to have ever been adapted into a film.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Right. I've not seen that.
Yes. Honestly, it was kind of fascinating. I haven't watched all of it. I watched parts of it, but maybe that tells you in and of itself.
Do they really capture what a complete bastard he is? Because that's the key to the story. He's a complete piece of shit.
Yes, and that's
why I love him.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yes. But they get very, they have to tone down his sexual lust and all these sorts of things. And it just doesn't work. Even though, actually, so it was directed by Richard Lester original Christopher Reeve Superman fame.
Oh.
And it also had in it Malcolm McDowell, from Clockwork Orange, Oliver Reed as Bismarck, and what's her name? Bond girl. Britt Ekland as Duchess Irma.
Oh, Irma.
Yes.
Right.
So it had like a great, great cast going for it. There was a lot of reasons why it should have gone right, but frankly, it was it wasn't necessarily a disaster. Like, well, it got mixed reviews, but the main point was that for George MacDonald Fraser himself, he swore that another Flashman film would never be made so long as he was alive.
Right.
So the one guy you really had to win over with it, they failed to.
Yes, and look, the reason that we have the Flashman books is because he wrote them in 1970.
Mm.
There is no way you get away with that sort of book today. And as for making a film, I mean, the one where he does the slavers and he travels to Africa and then onto the continent, I suppose there would be some DEI roles in that.
But, yes.
I mean, if they try to make it today, they'd want to make, I don't know, they'd want to make his wife black or something. And it's if you know anything about Flashman, that is so incongruous, that's not going to fly.
No, definitely not. But that's all right.
Yes.
Because we have an exceptional series of novels. And, and they're able to take the time with it. They're able to get inside, because it's obviously written as if it's his memoirs, they're able to get inside the head of the Flashman character in a way that the medium of film I just don't think could ever do.
Well, and of course, the great genius of these books is it's not just getting inside the head of the character that he's created, it's getting inside the head of real historical characters. Mm-hmm. So, the last one we talked about, the Retreat from Afghanistan, the first Flashman book, all of those conversations that you have between the high level players, all of those are accurate. And when I say accurate, I mean, I don't mean down to the word, because what we have is we have letters from the real historical character who said, look, I met with so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. Mm. We discussed this. We argued about this. And we agreed this. And that happens in the book. It's just that he doesn't do it in that formal, English, as in writing a memoir version.
Mm.
He brings it to life and there's discussion, there's back and forth, there's insults, but he brings the conversation to life. But the outcome of the conversation and the decisions made and the actions that follow it, all of those are historically accurate.
Right.
So he's not just bringing to life Flashman, he's bringing to life real historical characters. Now, for a while, I wasn't a huge fan of this particular book in the whole Flashman series.
Oh, really?
And I'll tell you why, because this one is not a historical story.
No.
So with his second book, what he decided to do is he decided to basically do a parody of The Prisoner of Zelda.
Zelda. Yes,
quite right. Yeah, I'm thinking of a Nintendo game, aren't I?
Yes. Which is fair.
Yeah. So he did a parody of that, and that is a fictional story. Now, he's still, because he's John Fraser McDonald, he's still wove in real historical figures.
Great selection of them.
Yes,
too.
Lola Montez, obviously Otto von Bismarck. They're all real historical characters, but he portrays them earlier in life before they became particularly famous. Mm. And so he captures, as far as we can tell, entirely accurate to what their personality could well have been, but it's like it's like an AI doing an approximation of something, or you know.
I see what you mean. Yeah,
he's done a sensible approximation of what these people, what Otto von Bismarck would have been like in his in his sort of late 20s and so on.
Well, I don't think it's an entirely untruthful depiction. Like, there are certain things that Bismarck says in this novel, and you're like, yeah, that really feels like something that Bismarck
like, that
would
sounds
say.
Like Bismarck. Yeah. But the later part of the story, when it sort of develops, that is a little bit more made up. Mm. But actually, on rereading it, I thought, no, actually, it is. I was being a bit too harsh on it, bit not being history. It is just a bloody good story.
It is.
And it is an enjoyable read.
It is. But also as well, because a lot of the places in it are made up, and a lot of the characters are made up. So just for example, one of the main duchies that we're going to talk about, Strachan's, is a fictitious place.
Yes.
The duchess who lives at Irma is a fictional woman. She wasn't a historical figure. Mm. And indeed, the man that Flashman ends up pretending to have to be, Carl Gustav, of minor Danish nobility, royalty rather, hence the title of the book, is also made up. But this actually, I quite enjoyed that on this occasion, because in the first one, if you know the history, you know where all of this is leading to. And Fraser manages to play on that in such a way that it builds the anticipation, because you know that all of the men exiling from Afghanistan are going to get massacred.
Yes.
And so it puts almost like this, you know, Alfred Hitchcock-esque ticking time bomb beneath the table.
In the real history, one surgeon, one man survived whichever Lord something, Lord North's
luckiest
army.
Luckiest man in the world.
Yes, whereas in the Flashman version, it's one surgeon plus Flashman.
Right.
But otherwise, it's the same story.
Yes. But with this one, because a lot of it is fictionalised in the places he goes to, you can tell that he's really just having fun with...
he's developing the character.
Yeah, just finding outcomes for different fates, different gruesome fates. Yes. Like, you know, some of Bismarck's henchmen and stuff like that. And, you know, these are great characters.
And it's lovely watching Flashman evolve as well, because... Mm. You know, as we talked about last time, he is a womanizer.
Oh, yes.
And a cheat and a bastard and a backstabber. And he is a coward. That's a key part of his character. He's a complete coward. But he is a temperamental coward, not an instinctual coward. Because in this, he has no choice at certain points but to fight. And when he does have to fight, if his back's to the wall, he's actually quite brave in that. He's quite smart. Yes.
Yeah, he's quite smart.
But as soon as the opportunity comes to throw one of his allies under the bus and do a legger, you know, that's it. He's off.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So let's start talking about what happens. So the novel picks off almost immediately after the events of the first novel, which we'll remember because you all, of course, watched the original Chronicles that we did on it, didn't you? That... Flashman is a celebrated hero. This
completely undeserved, by the way.
Yes, but this
just happened to be the last man alive in a fort stormed by the Afghanis. And when he came to, they all got the impression that he was basically holding out single-handed, and he played into it marvellously. And Britain, looking for a hero, decided to basically anoint him.
The disaster and the catastrophe.
Yes, it was a catastrophe. We need a hero to bring something out of this.
Yeah.
So he was basically anointed a national hero, and he was canny enough to go along with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he comes back with this completely undeserved acclaim.
Mm.
And he comes back to his Scotch wife, who he's kind of forced into in a shotgun marriage because whilst on assignment in Glasgow, he kind of diddled one of the local landowner's daughters and basically got dragooned into marrying her, which actually turns out to be quite helpful because his old man goes bust and his Scotch relatives are keeping him in the clink. So they're keeping him in the coinage. But the only problem with Elspeth, lovely and stupid as she is, she's a complete trollop. Mm. So he gets back, and it becomes quite evident to him that his wife is sort of putting through the mattress all about town. And, you know, what's he to do about it? Because he can't get rid of her. Because, you know, the Scottish
he's
in-laws,
indebted to his,
well, they have the
grouchy
money.
Miserable, loathing, yeah. Presbyterian in-laws.
And he looks at this situation, he's like, well, I'm certainly not getting by on half lieutenant's pay while I'm not on deployment, and I'm certainly not going on deployment because I'm a coward.
Yeah.
So I've got no choice but to put up with a wife. And actually he does still quite like her anyway, because she's a beautiful idiot.
Yeah,
that's his type.
Yeah. She's easy company.
Yes, exactly. So you know, he thinks to himself, well, how am I going to remedy this situation? Well, of course, there are whores for that. So off he goes to a card house with his friend Speedy Cut.
Yes.
And because he's a gentleman, you know, he
an illegal card house.
An illegal card house, yes. Now, because he is a gentleman, you know, he doesn't like to rush to these things. So he's upstairs playing cards with the whores and his friend Speedy Cut when the constabulary arrive to do a raid on the illegal card house.
Yes.
Now, a few twists and turns aside, I shan't spoil it, but he almost manages to get away, but ends up with the constabulary giving him chase off down the street. So off he goes. And the way he sort of extracts himself situation, as well as obviously throwing his friend under the bus.
Well, love to focus in on that moment for a second as well. One thing is that at the card house, Flashman points to the fact that actually, look, I am existing at the tail end of a glorious era right now. He's like, I am indulging in the greatest age, which was just Georgian debauchery, right? Where everyone just had a bit of fun. Everyone was, you know, just tastefully, Englishly, of course. You know, it was tasteful English debauchery.
Debauchery, but with good manners, yes.
But Victoria is on the throne now, and everyone's got to stick up their butts, and all of the morals are getting stuffy. And so Flashman is actually pinpointing that there has just been like a very psychological change beginning.
He can see the culture shifting.
Right.
And he's determined to make the most of the debauchery while it's still living large.
And so, as you say, when he is being pursued by the policeman down the streets trying to get away because of seeing him at this illegal place, Speedycut says to him, because Flash obviously had his leg broke, Flashman had his leg broke in the when he heroically defended Piper's Fort near Jalalabad, he's not able to outrun the police. And so Speedycut says, oh, I'll hold them off, I'll have a fight with them. And the Flashman being Flashman is like, yeah, all right. Like, if you're stupid enough to stick your neck out for me, I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth.
Yeah, Flashman.
Which is hilarious as well, because actually, with Flashman's injury, Speedycut could have easily left him behind and just gone off himself to leave Flashman to be caught. But heroically, he's looking out for his friend with a friendship that is entirely unreciprocal.
Oh, yes.
And it just instant comedy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, complete bastard that he is, but absolutely. So he heads off. He gets away from the police, but not quite, because again, he's like you said, he's still got his leg injury.
Yeah,
and he notices an empty carriage outside a house, so he ducks in there, only for that carriage to then very shortly after attempt to be occupied by the genuine inhabitants of it, and just his luck, it turns out to be an incredibly beautiful woman.
Just his luck.
Yes, I remember her by her name that she went by later on, Lola Montez.
But Rosanna James.
Rosanna James.
Because she's married to a British officer. Captain James.
Exactly, yes.
Soon to be a very much divorced Captain James. But
yes, exactly. And she's being escorted by a young Prussian gentleman, who we later discover to be Otto von Bismarck of German fame.
Yes.
Yes, bit of a statesman.
As in, through sheer tyranny of will,
yes,
he managed to forge Germany through, as he gave in his speech, blood and iron.
Yes,
into a nation that would change the course of history.
I mean, Bismarck is clearly a character of transhuman will and purpose, and Flashman manages to well, George Fraser MacDonald manages to capture that early on with, with what must a man like this have been like in his late 20s?
Right.
The steely single purpose. Anyway, so Bismarck is having none of this, but he is a right Prussian prude, and whatever her name is, Mrs. James.
Yes.
I mean, she's a high-spirited young woman.
And she has a sense of adventure.
Very much a sense of adventure. And she's being escorted by one of her husband's friends who's been put up to, you know, to escort her about town.
Yes.
And she's thoroughly bored of him because, you know, he's a uptight German.
Mm.
And so she takes the opportunity to show kindness to Flashman, and also notices he's big and broad, and he's got a bit of, you know, a bit of adventure about him, and she likes that.
And she likes it even more when the policemen do eventually catch up to him, and one of them says, "My God, aren't you Captain Flashman of Jalalabad fame?" And so he's literally, his status is being pumped up in front of her as well, as a singular soldier, this daring hero.
Yes, and she's a bored trollop, and she's looking at this thinking, right, well, there's opportunity here.
Mm.
So anyway, romance ensues.
Well, may I just say, go ahead. Just one thing, that from what I understand of it as well, a lot of the inspiration for this story actually just came out of, you know, George Fraser doing his usual just meticulous research of the era and realizing that there was one particular moment in British history in which Otto von Bismarck and Lola Montez were both in London at the same time together.
Yes.
And so a lot of what follows just comes from him seeing that one observation and just going, right, there's definitely a story there to be told.
Let's put Flashman straight through the middle of it.
Yeah.
So anyway, romance ensues with Mrs. James, I should say. And, you know, he does remark that she is an exceptionally beautiful young woman.
Yes, with a slight Irish trail, so she's got Anglo-Irish.
Oh, she's a bog eater, but very, very, very beautiful she is.
Mm.
And but she is, as noted, she is a spirited lass, and it was her inclination to basically hasten him in his lovemaking with the back of a hairbrush. Now, because she is an exceptionally beautiful young woman, he can tolerate this up to a point, but an English gentleman can only be pushed so far. So at some point, he takes enough exception to this that he decides to liven her up a bit. And she gets all indignant, as women are likely to do in this sort of situation. And it leads to a slightly unfortunate situation where he's having to make his way out of the residence, putting his trousers on as he goes down the stairs while she throws a piss pot at his head. Now, we've all been there. Such is the challenge of being a gentleman about town, especially in London. When engaging with the hot ones are mental.
Well, I mean, that's the risk we take, isn't it?
It is.
One of the little details I love about that as well is that because of her penchant for the hairbrush, Flashman remarks on the fact that literally he cannot go throughout the rest of his life without seeing a hairbrush
and
just being reminded of her.
Yes.
Every time he comes into with an everyday object, he's just there like, oh my God, it was Lola. You know, just over and over again. But the other thing as well is just the fact that because already in the first novel, Flashman has been established as such a womanizer, but also as well as such a man of insatiable lust. Like, he cannot go a week without a woman.
And that would be quite a long time for him.
And so the fact that there is a woman out there with like a higher sex drive, like a deeper lust than him, and that he's just going, oh, bloody hell, let me catch my breath. You know, like, it's just like, bloody hell, it immediately gets across to you just how insatiable this woman is.
Yes. Well, it did her well. Remember, audience, she's one of the real characters in this.
Yes.
Some of the later ones, but she is one of the real characters in it. So anyway, so he beats retreat. Now, it all things being equal, this would simply be just another wench for Flashman, and he probably wouldn't have thought much about it. As it happens, though, Mrs. James, after her divorce, then decides, well, look, I need to make my way in life. how am I going to do this? She's got a sense of adventure, so she reinvents herself as Lola Montez.
Yes.
And passes herself off.
Spanish dancer.
In the exotic Spanish dancer. And she passes herself off as this sort of rarefied and very... And of course, you could do that back in the 1840s because no internet. You can't look people up.
Mm.
She reinvents herself as this sort of legendary dancer and gets herself introduced to the London stage. And Flashman, who at this time was quite bored, I mean, this was a few months later, but Flashman being bored decides to sabotage her. I suppose we don't need to go into too much detail on that, but simply to say, he made an important enemy.
Yes.
The other enemy he made was that other chap in the carriage who ended up going off in a huff, which was Otto von Bismarck, who did spend a bit of time in London, English polite society, and he got taken out by various people to do a spot of hunting and riding. And
Yes. They go to the Leicestershire countryside to hang out with all of Flashman's chums.
Yes.
And there's this remarkable moment where, and it's one of the things that I bookmarked because just so funny to watch him. Flashman has been welcomed into the hunting lodge and is expecting just this wonderful, easygoing, plain sailing, you know, weekend away with the lads. Yes.
Bunch of cads.
Yes. Bunch of cads. And then it says, "The fellows gave a hurrah when I came in and thrust punch and cheroots at me while Tom did his duty by the stranger. Baron, says he. The brute has a title, thinks I. Permit me to present Captain Flashman. Flash, this is Baron Otto von Schorhausen, ain't it? I can't get my confounded tongue round it. Schorhausen, says Otto, bowing stiffly with his eyes on mine. But that is, in fact, the name of my estate. If you will pardon my correction, my family name is Bismarck. It's an old man's fancy, no doubt, but it seemed to me that he said it in a way that told me that you would hear it again. It meant nothing to me, of course, at the time, but I was sure that it was going to. And again, I felt that prickle of fear up my back, the cold grey eyes, the splendid build and features, the superb arrogance of the man, all combined to awe me. If you're morally as soft as butter, as I am, with a good streak of the toad-eater in you, there's no doing anything with people like Bismarck. You can have all the fame that I had then, and the good looks and the inches and the swagger, and I had those too. But you know you're dirt to him. If you have to tangle with him, as the Americans say, you know you'll have to get drunk first. I was sober, so I toadied. Ah, honoured to make your acquaintance, Baron, says I, giving him my hand. Trust you're enjoying your visit. They are already acquainted, as I am sure you'll remember, says he, shaking hands. He had a grip like a vice. I guessed you were stronger than I was, and I was damn strong, in body at least. You recollect an evening in London, Mrs. James was present? By God, says I, all astounded. So I do. Well, and here you are, eh? Damn, I never expected. Well, Baron, I'm glad to see you. I trust Mrs. James as well. Surely I should ask you, says he with a thin smile. I have not seen the lady since that evening. No? Well, I haven't seen a great deal of her myself. I was prepared to be pleasant and let bygones be bygones if he was. He stood, smiling with his mouth, considering me. Do you know, says he at length, I feel sure I have seen you before, but I cannot think where. That is unusual, for I have an excellent memory. No, not in England. Have you ever been in Germany, perhaps? I said I hadn't. Ah, well, it is of no interest, says he coolly, meaning that I was of no interest, and turned away from me. I hadn't liked him before, but from that moment I hated Bismarck, and decided that if ever the chance came to do him a dirty turn, I wouldn't let it slip away.
Spoiler alert, there it is an opportunity to do him a dirty turn, and it happens just a few days later.
Yes.
And so Flashman is now in the situation where he has made two enemies of historical consequence. And as you mentioned there, you alighted upon the point that Bismarck thinks he recognizes him. He thinks he's seen him before, and it's a very powerful recollection he has, but he can't quite place it. He doesn't know what's going on. It doesn't make any sense. So anyway, Flashman does the dirty by Bismarck. He's already done the dirty by Lola Montez. More time passes, and I think we skip a few things because
they go horse riding, don't they?
Yes.
And then there's the horse race, and Flashman being a very competent rider, actually, you know, he's letting, as they're going through the wilderness and everything, and they're racing, he's hanging back, he's taking his time, he's pacing the horse, he's letting you know, his opponents scout out the territory where the safe jumps.
He's a damn good rider,
right? Yes. But then once it's all clear in his path ahead, he gets neck and neck with Bismarck, and then ahead of him. And there's a small opening, a clearing.
A jump
between the thorn bushes. And he basically says, you know, get out the way. It's my right of way because I'm ahead of you. And Bismarck totally ignores Flashman.
Yes.
And then makes the jump, and Flashman bottles it in front of this man who he despises.
Yes.
And so he's been seen to be the man with less nerve than the mighty Bismarck, but at this point is no one of any repute.
No,
he's just
he is even worse because he knows full well that somebody like Bismarck has a hell of a lot more nerve than him.
Mm.
But he's all about appearances when there's nothing on the line, when it's just a steeple chase across country.
Yes,
you know, he wants to look the big man. If there was actual, you know, cannon fire going on, he'd be cowering behind something. In society, when it's reputation, he has to maintain his undeserved reputation, and Bismarck sort of robs him from that. So following that, of course, he does the dirty on him by engineering a situation where he gets into a fight and comes off the worst of it.
This was great. Yes. This was such a great one because he brings in, doesn't he, John Gully, this veteran championship boxer
and a gentleman.
And a gentleman, absolutely. But the thing is, with all of this, whilst Bismarck has been... Bear in mind that Bismarck is a foreigner and a stranger who is only being humoured by Flashman's friends because some uncle, is a friend.
Yes.
And it's just there, like... But every... And as a guest, there is a certain etiquette, obviously, in English society. And what Bismarck should be doing is sitting back, being casual, laughing with the gentlemen, you know, listening to what they have to say about England, listening to them tell about... But Bismarck, in his usual domineering way, just forces... He chooses the conversation. He chooses what's going to be discussed.
Yes.
He chooses the correct opinion on the matter.
Whilst regularly reminding the room full of Englishmen how Germany is superior.
Right, so he just goes on these... grand patriotic monologues about Prussian militarism and how mighty Prussia is, and why our the Schlager competition with these swords is just so much better than your stupid little boxing matches that have no skill in them. It's just two men thrashing at one another. And so Flashman basically says, right, I've had enough of this. He says, we have a veteran boxer here. He's retired now. He's about 60. He says, but maybe he could just show you, Herr Bismarck, that there is actually some skill to boxing. And so eventually, as a man of honour, and also because they are all gentlemen as well, it's not like Bismarck can say, oh no, I'm not fighting this pleb. No, they are all of the same pedigree. And so Bismarck gets himself into this altercation because of his own pride. Well, and as well, Flashman's like, well, obviously I'm not going to step into the ring with him, but I do know this man here who could beat the shit out of him.
If you enjoyed this piece of premium content from the Lotus Eaters, head to our website where you can find more.